Books of Elsewhere, Chapter 7, page 48. A shadow thick and solid as a pool of oil raced after them from the edge of the forest. It swept up the path, filling the sky. It shut out the moonlight. Olive could feel it turning the air to ice. Goosebumps prickled across her body. A chilly breeze swirled through her hair. "Hurry!" she shouted to Morton, pulling him along by the arm. With her free hand, she clumsily straightened the spectacles on her face. Ahead of them, she could see the hanging frame and its pictures in the hallway. "Stay close to me," Horatio yowled, streaking ahead of them like a furry comet. Morton pumped his little legs, trying to keep up, and sharp stones jabbed at Olive's feet. But she could barely feel them. Her heart was thundering, her lungs ached. Her whole body knew nothing mattered but getting away from the darkness, and it was coming closer. She could sense it. The thing in the forest, the thing that had been plotting, biding its time, was now just inches away. Horatio shot through the picture frame like a dart from a blowgun. Olive grabbed Morton beneath the arms and half-boosted, half-tossed him after the cat. "Hey!" Morton piped indignantly. Then Olive grabbed the sides of the frame and hoisted herself face first onto the hallway carpet just as the shadow swooped in around her. Horatio didn't waste any time. "This way," he hissed, streaking down the hall. By the time Olive and Morton had scrambled to their feet, the cat had hopped into the painting outside Olive's bedroom. Olive turned her back and got her first good look at Morton under the hallway's electric lights. What she saw made her freeze in place. Morton's skin, which had seemed nearly white in the moonlight, was actually a very pale peachy color. But it didn't look like ordinary skin. Olive glanced down at her own arm. A normal person's skin was full of tiny details, moles and freckles, fine wrinkles and fuzzy hairs. But Morton's skin was perfectly smooth and slightly shiny. It wasn't skin at all. It was paint. She backed uneasily away from Morton toward the painting Horatio had entered. "Here," she whispered, pushing the shakiness out of her voice. "I'll help you through." Morton took a step backward. "No, I don't want to." "Morton, come on, before my parents hear us." "I don't want to go in there. I just got out." Olive wanted to scream, but she knew she shouldn't. Instead, she put both hands in her hair and pulled. "You don't belong out here, Morton," she said as quietly as she could manage. "You're a painting. I don't know what will happen if my parents see you, but it won't be good. Now come on." Morton took another slow, sneaky step backward, and then he pivoted on his heel and he took off toward Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody's bedroom. Olive darted after him. Morton raced around the hallway corner and through the bedroom door, with Olive skidding behind. He scurried around the side of the Dunwoody's king-size bed and stopped facing Olive with the bed as a barricade between them. "Boys are faster than girls," he said. Olive stared at him, incredulous, and then she leaped onto the middle of her parents' high, puffy bed and glared down at him. "Morton, stop it," she commanded. "Morton, stop it," Morton echoed. "I don't sound like that. I don't sound like that." Olive grabbed at him. Morton dodged to the left. Olive mirrored him, her feet sinking deep into the mattress. Morton dodged to the right. Olive bounced after him. "Can't catch me," Morton sang, and then, using a bedpost for leverage, he launched himself back toward the hall. Olive leapt off the bed, and in one bound she was through the door. In another, she was down the hallway, and in a final bound, she was planting her foot directly on Morton's path, and Morton was sliding along the hallway carpet on his stomach, just like a puck on an air hockey table. Olive threw herself down on top of Morton, clamping one hand over his mouth. Her fingers nearly slipped off his smooth skin. "Shh," she hissed. For a moment, they both listened, but the big stone house was quiet. Her parents hadn't heard. Keeping one hand over Morton's mouth, Olive yanked him to his feet, dragged him toward the painting outside her bedroom door. After straightening the spectacles on her nose, Olive locked her hands under Morton's spindly arms and hoisted him toward the painting. "Hey, don't push me," Morton complained. But Olive was already stuffing him through the picture frame, like a wet quilt into a dryer. She pulled herself in after him and landed with an almost graceful somersault in the soft field. Morton was sprawled face first on the grass beside her. It was cool in this painting, but not as chilly as it was in the forest, and the air was very still. The sky hung above them like a pale gray canopy, moonless and starless, without a trace of sunset. Horatio was pacing impatiently on the grass. "If you two could manage to stop wasting time," he scolded, "everything would already have been taken care of. Now get up and follow me." Olive and Morton got up, brushed themselves off, each trying very hard not to look at the other. "That is not a good cat," Morton grumbled. "Well, I trust him more than I trust you," snapped Olive. "You certainly haven't had any good suggestions." Morton tossed his tufty head and stomped off after Horatio. The cat guided them across the field toward the row of houses, his giant orange tail twitching like a barnet, like a banner. The grass under Olive's feet felt soft and dewy, and threads of mist lay across the field floating in the motionless air. Gradually, Morton, stomping, turned to shuffling and gazed around, nearly tipping on the hem of his nightshirt. "I think I know this place," he said slowly. "I think I was here once." In single file, they reached the edge of the field. Horatio led Olive and Morton along the row of houses. And in the painting, they had looked small and simple, but up close, Olive saw that they were grand old houses covered with gingerbread trim and sturdy pillars and leaded windows of every shape and size. The row of the houses lined a wide, empty street, and no one sat on the porches, and no one played on the lawns, and no one lit a lamp in the windows, and yet Olive thought she caught a glimpse of faces staring out at them through the slats in the shutters, or peeping at them between their closed curtains. Whenever she turned to check, though, the faces were gone. "I do know this place," Morton whispered, and somehow Olive had the sense that she knew this place, too. It was familiar but strange, like something from a dream. "Horatio," Olive asked, "where are we?" The cat gave a slight shrug. "We're here," he said without looking back. "Elsewhere." Horatio stopped abruptly in front of the three-story wooden house, and in the dim light the house looked gray, but by day it might have been any color. Around the house stood a low wooden fence with a gate that was shut in an unfriendly way. The house was silent, clearly empty. Its windows stared at them like vacant mirrors. "Why are we stopping here?" Olive asked. "This is my house," said Morton softly. Horatio watched them both, saying nothing. Olive looked at the house again. She had seen this house before. She had seen it many times. It was Mrs. Niven's house. Olive spun around, examining the street. Yes, there was Mrs. Dewey's house, one door down with its wide front porch. And across the street was the brick house with the dormer windows. And the big oak tree in the front yard was just a scrawny sapling. And there were other houses that looked familiar, just with different colors and different details. And there were houses that she didn't recognize at all. Olive's eyes came to rest on the plot next to Mrs. Niven's house, where the old stone house, her house, should have been. There was only an empty swath of land. This was Linden Street, but it was the Linden Street of a long, long time ago, or the Linden Street of a time that never really existed. "Horatio," Olive began, staring at the unoccupied plot, "where's our house? Why isn't it here?" "It wasn't necessary," said Horatio brusquely. "Olive, we must be on our way." He turned back toward the street. Morton grasped Olive's arm. His hands made a warm spot on her mist-chilled skin. "You're not just going to leave me here, are you?" Olive looked down into Morton's moony, frightened face and irritated voice in her brain, the one that kept saying, "Girls are smarter than boys," felt a little less sore. She looked at Horatio for help. The cat cocked his head matter-of-factly. "It's the closest to home he's going to get." Olive looked back down at Morton. "I'll come back to see you soon," she paused. "If you want me to, I mean." Morton took a step back, the frightened look on his face wrestling with the frown. The frown won. "I don't care," he said with a shrug. "Fine," Olive retorted. "Then goodbye." "Bye," said Morton, looking away. Olive let out an angry sigh, turned to hurry after Horatio, who was already moving briskly along the row of houses. And halfway down the street, she glanced back over her shoulder, and in the dim gray light, she could see Morton still standing in front of his big empty house, his baggy white nightshirt a pale blotch on the deserted street. Silently, Ala followed Horatio back across the field to the picture frame. "So you figured out a few more things, have you?" said the cat at last, in the kind of tone that said this wasn't really a question. "I guess so. I would be more careful if I were you. Don't let anyone know how much you know." "What do you mean?" Horatio paused and gave Olive a hard look. "I worded that poorly. Don't let anyone know how little you know. Now, what you need to do is stay out of trouble. Perhaps you should find a nice quiet hobby, one that won't get anyone killed, like stamp collecting. That's seldom fatal." Horatio turned away and flounced toward the frame. "Now hurry up, we can't stay here for long." "Wait, stop," begged Olive. "What do you mean, get anyone killed?" With a put-upon huff, Horatio plopped on the grass and began to groom his paws. "First, the spectacles. You found them, you use them, you know what they do." "Well, not exactly." "You can normally climb into a painting," Horatio snapped in mid-leg. "You must be wearing them to get in or to get out. In other words, don't lose them while you are inside or you will be trapped. And then your only hope is to be released by a guide, namely me. And don't stay in any of the paintings for too long, or you'll never get out at all." "Not really." "But why don't you need the spectacles?" Horatio hesitated. He gave his back legs some careful attention. "Haven't you ever heard that cats can see things that others cannot?" he answered at last through a mouthful of his own brilliant orange fur. "No," said Olive, but Horatio was too absorbed in tail maintenance at this point to notice. "My coat is simply filthy," he muttered. "I think you look beautiful," Olive said. "Do you?" For a moment, Horatio stopped licking. A tiny bashful look of pleasure flitted over his face. Horatio shook the look away. "In any case, you're not making yourself very popular with the certain someone who is watching you, and when you just did, it was dangerous." "Well, I didn't know what would happen when I went into the painting," cried Olive. "But when I did, I knew I couldn't just leave Morton there." "I didn't say you shouldn't have done it. I just said it was dangerous." Horatio got to his feet, looking up at Olive. "You are showing that you won't be a pushover, and you might even put up a fight. You won't just let him have his way." "Him who?" Horatio turned away, trotting the last steps to the picture frame. "You'll see," he said. And then he hopped through the frame. Olive clambered after him. And back in the comforting gold light of the hallway, Olive looked at the painting of Linden Street. And as she watched, one tiny light flickered to life in a distant window. And she knew that Morton was there, waiting.